Hello, everyone. Super excited about our episode today. I'm sitting here with my true partner in taking care of patients, Amy Rudnick. In 2011, we started our journey working together. In 1982, she started working for a gentleman named Paul Hoffman. In 2011, I had the privilege of joining Paul's practice and us working together until he retired. And so at that point, Amy adopted me. And we've been working together since then, taking care of patients, tens of thousands of appointments together, and trying to be people's partner in getting healthier or staying healthy. And so we're looking to connect with everyone to try to figure out some strategies here. If you're off the reservation and need to get back in line with your health, hopefully we can give you some strategies. But also we're going to talk about what Amy has learned through her decades of taking care of not just individuals, but of spouses, children, families, grandparents to grandchildren, their friends, social circles, and trying to take her life experience in working with these people to give you some of the things she's learned and maybe some tips that you can use in your life to take better care of yourself or to maintain a high level of health. So thanks, Aim.
Glad to be here.
What we're trying to do here is healthcare, not sick care. Too often in people's relationships with their healthcare professionals is it's a responsive relationship. You go there with a problem, they're looking for a problem, they're finding a problem, and they're treating it. And so I think what we want to focus on here is what we focus on our clinical practice, is trying to give people the tools to stay healthy, to be healthy, to stay healthier. And we're dividing it into two different approaches. One is what happens when you're in the office with your healthcare providers or with us, and then also what happens when you're not with us. You're only with us a couple hours a year. If you come to us with the most frequent, you know, most frequent people are coming once every 1 or 2 months. Those people are only with us for 10 to 12 hours a year. We do think that there's a large part of this conversation about the activities you do when you're not with us that matter so much. You have a larger level of control of the outcomes that occur in your health, dental and beyond.
Correct.
So I think what's really interesting with a dental hygienist is the goal is that you're seeing our patients more than I am, right? I'm dealing with decay, gum disease problems, extractions, implants, crowns, fillings, whatever they are. And then once we're finished with treatment, they're going back into your schedule and you're working with them over the course of time and really tracking how well they're doing cleaning their teeth, tracking their response to the things that may be in their mouth. And as we mentioned before, the nice things you can look at is with families, and you're treating grandparents, right, to children, to grandchildren, you can really start to understand somebody's behavior along with their genetic susceptibility. So I think that's a good place to start is how do you ascertain what somebody needs to do or what they need from you from the level of their own susceptibility to their behavior?
One advantage of seeing my patients for many, many years is that I know them, I know their habits. I know their susceptibility to periodontal disease, so I can really customize their treatment to their needs. And every patient needs are different. It's not just come in, we clean your teeth, we say goodbye, you come in 6 months, and that's it. This is much more customized.
I always laugh when at a social event and someone says, oh, you're a dentist. What's the best toothpaste? Right?
Exactly. Yeah. That's a good question. Happened? Yeah, absolutely.
Right. What is your answer to that question?
Well, my answer is patients don't realize. Most patients come in and when I ask them what toothpaste you're using, they say, well, so-and-so whitening, because they think that a toothpaste will whiten their teeth. We know this is not true necessarily. Any toothpaste that claims to be a whitening toothpaste is very abrasive, very grainy. So it may scrub a little harder, maybe get some stains off. But as we know, the grainier the toothpaste, the more damaging it is to the tooth structure. So I like Sensodyne products. There are many different kinds of Sensodyne toothpaste, but they're all not abrasive, and they don't damage the tooth structure. They don't damage the tissue, and they do a good job cleaning.
You know, it's funny. We were just interviewing a hygienist last week for our practice, and we asked them that question.
And
they said Sensodyne. So, all right.
She's
pretty
good.
Okay, so
we're on the same
page. All right.
Yeah.
All right. Come on in for the working interview,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
Yeah. You need to have an approach that is looking at what you're susceptible for and hopefully treating those things or not making them worse.
Correct. Correct.
And so more looking at the options that are available and researching them and talking with your healthcare professional to make the right decision, that there is not a single best toothpaste. And there might be a couple that are great for you.
Yeah, there are a few. Yeah.
If you had to bottle everything up, right?
Okay.
All these years of experience. Yeah. Is there something that the healthiest patients do that you would say that the average patient doesn't do that sets them apart?
Well, I have a lot of patients who say to me, I floss my teeth every day. I never miss it. And I'm like, okay, that, you know, that explains why your mouth looks so good. But I have several patients that are very diligent in their home care. They use electric toothbrushes. They know to brush 2 minutes morning and night, and they clean in between their teeth. Either it's floss or other implements, but they do it regularly.
The funny comment they say sometimes is that my spouse makes fun of me how much I spend time in the bathroom.
Absolutely.
Or they're yelling at me that I'm in the bathroom too long.
Absolutely.
And their mouths are really
clean. And those are the patients that come in and they're clean.
So I guess as we dip into this, we can say that investing some time and effort into really doing things the right way for yourself will repay you with the best level of health.
And it really doesn't take a lot of time to do. People try to like skirt the issue of cleaning in between their teeth by using products that really don't work as well. And there's no magic potion that is going to keep your teeth clean. You want to clean bacteria off your teeth, and it has to be mechanically cleaned. And it really does not take that long to do.
So with that, let's dive into the first section of our talk, and that's in-office strategies, we'll call it, utilizing us. And what would you say, how often should somebody get their teeth cleaned?
So again, we customize it to each patient. This is not a one-size-fits-all office. So patients who come in, they're clean, there's not a lot of bacteria, there's not a lot of inflammation, everything looks good, we'll do every 6 months. But there are plenty of patients that are susceptible to periodontal disease. Some are very, very diligent in their home care, and even with their efforts that they use, they still get inflammation. It's just their systemic makeup. So we can reduce them to 4 and 3 months. I see a lot of my patients every 3 months.
Yeah, it's important to note this is a moving target. This is a moving target as per your susceptibility, your home care, and also what's going on at this stage of life you're in, right? When you're pregnant, we're going to see you more often. As you're getting older, we may see you more often. You know, I have a patient who, when he goes through life things that are really busy and really tough, a lot of travel, he'll actually make more frequent cleaning appointments, and then he'll back off when life is more, quote unquote, normal. I guess, what are some of the indicators that you would say that you would need a more frequent cleaning versus not? What could someone look for at home?
There's a few things. Patients who just are not diligent, and they'll come and say, I am too busy, I don't have time, I'd rather come in more frequently. Fine, it works. And then there are patients who just happen to be susceptible.
How would you know if you're susceptible?
Let's say I see somebody every 3 months and they say to me, but I'm brushing correctly, I'm flossing effectively, I'm still bleeding. That's an indication to me that their body just has a tendency to build up more saliva, build up more bacteria. And even though they're doing everything they can, we have to get ahead of it by doing it more frequently.
Right. So people are getting inflammation in their gum tissue. And typically when they're flossing or brushing, they might see blood.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good sign that there's inflammation, that you might not be getting your teeth cleaned as frequently enough, because there's hard particles, the bacteria in food, calcifying your teeth, and they become unremovable by you.
We need to remove that. I mean, I have patients that come in and say, if I mention, well, you're bleeding, there's inflammation. Well, they've always bled. So it's an assumption that that's just normal. Bleeding gums are a sign of inflammation, and it has to be treated.
Right. So if you're not lucky enough to be a patient of our practice, one thing that you can look about with who you're getting taken care of, how they're treating and how they're assessing you. Are you coming in? Are they cleaning you and sending you on their way? Or there's a conversation about your current status and helping you, give you the tools and assessing where you are. Right. One of the parts of us recording these episodes and reaching out to people is to try to give you the tools so that you're better informed to take better care of yourself. So a few things we'll go through today is what you can look for from your hygienist, not just the psychological, philosophical approach that we have in our office, but also the experience that you have when receiving care. Look for some things, or see if you're not getting some of the stuff we're talking about. That may mean that you have the perfect person for what you want to know about, or you don't have the perfect person to attend to the needs that you have.
Correct. So there are people that come in and they're like, blah, 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 blah. I know, don't yell at me. I know what I'm supposed to be doing. And you know what? I'm not going to hammer it into them. I say as little as possible to be most effective. And there are people that just are not interested in instruction. They want to come in, get their teeth cleaned, and leave. See you later.
Right. So to wrap up that part of it is that how frequently you should come in is depending on you and where you're at, right? We have patients who end up, as they get older, dementia, Parkinson's, mechanical diseases that affects your dexterity. And so you can't always do what you've always done to maintain health. If you're doing the same thing continuously, you'll get a different response.
Well, we change over time. We age. There's, you know, things change in our lives that will affect how we take care of our teeth and susceptibility.
And so the other thing we think about is the experience of the in-office experience of a hygiene appointment. So what else are you looking at besides the buildup on their teeth, the gums? What else are you looking at in a patient?
Looking at, well, we do an oral cancer check. That's the first thing that I do. And nobody else is going to be doing that on them. So we check their tongue. We check the back of their throat. We make sure that everything is healthy. We take radiographs, which are controversial still. If I have a patient that needs x-rays every year and they say, you always say that every year, I explain to them, if you come in as an adult and you have a history of a lot of dentistry, that's a signal to me that you're susceptible to decay. And it's more important for you to have x-rays because we want to check under old restorations. You can get cavities under crowns. So that's where it's most important. If I have an adult patient come in, they have no cavity history, I will wait. I can wait 1, 2, 3 years. And so it's, again, it's custom to the patient's oral health.
We started using in the practice the use of AI.
Yes.
How's your experience been with
that? I like AI. Yeah.
So explain what it does.
So AI, I don't depend on it. But what it is, it's another diagnostic tool. We try to use as many diagnostic tools as possible to be able to treat the patient. So we take x-rays, we look clinically, which we've always done, and then I look at AI and it will either reinforce what I think I saw or maybe bring something to my attention. And oftentimes it's correct. So it's just either a reinforcement or, hey, you better check this area out again.
It's analyzing the radiographs and showing us areas that may be an issue.
Correct.
What are you doing when you're poking somebody's gums and measuring things, right? Some people will say, oh, I heard you say numbers 1, 3, 4, but whatever. And you're poking this little thing. Maybe explain what that is too, just so people know what that is.
That's called periodontal probing. And that is checking on their periodontal health. So a tissue is attached to a tooth, but not completely. There's a little space between the tooth and the gum. And there's an indicator on our probe that's marked in millimeters. So we use the baseline as 5 millimeters or deeper would mean that the tissue has attached more than it normally should. So that's what we consider that could be a lead to periodontal disease. When we probe, we're looking to see the detachment of the tissue from the tooth. And if it's deep, then we have to treat it accordingly.
So part of a proper hygiene appointment would be measuring your pocket depth.
Always.
As we call it, pocket depth.
We check
depth,
every
right?
patient.
Mm-hmm. Right. So you want to make sure you're getting that done to you to see. And it might not be done every single time if you're in good health and not a lot of inflammation, but it needs to be part of the relationship that you have with your hygienist. Part of what we're doing always was TMJ evaluation, your joint, but now we're doing more airway evaluation, having more conversations with patients about sleep and their airway.
Yes.
And then the other part that you talk with them a lot about is just crowding, orthodontic needs.
That's a big one for me. Because as we age, our teeth tend to shift toward the midline, meaning they tilt forward. The effect of that is that the teeth get crowding or crossed on, usually it's the lower front teeth. And if I bring up orthodontics to a patient, they're like, well, I don't care how they look. It's not an aesthetic issue. I don't raise aesthetic issues with my patients. I wait for them to bring them to me. That's not what I'm there for. So if I see crowding, I explain that it makes it more difficult to clean in between, and thus you may end up with a gum disease or periodontal disease, and you can actually lose teeth from this.
The other part is how when your teeth start to shift, your lower teeth, they start hitting your upper teeth in a hazardous way. And you start getting chipping, breaking, and wearing down the tooth surface.
Correct.
Look at Lewis that came in, right? Lewis had some crowding. His lower front tooth started protruding.
Correct.
And he snapped his front tooth in half because of it. We're lucky we were able to fix it
that
with a crown.
That was a beautiful crown you did.
Yeah,
I have to say, accolades to you.
Yeah, that's
yes.
Our lab.
So once they start to crowd, one tooth gets out of position and they start to lean forward. I always say it's the path of least resistance. They tend to lean toward the middle of the mouth. And once they start to get out of position, that can continue to happen.
Let's talk about plaque and calculus and part of why your profession really started and what you're spending a large part of, more than 50% of your day, is dealing with this, right? With your actual mechanical actions.
Cleaning. Yeah. Very basic. What is plaque? Plaque comes from bacteria in our saliva. Saliva is there to aid in digestion. So it's being produced all day long. Statistically, it takes about 12 to 24 hours for a film of that bacteria to stick to the tooth. If it's not cleaned properly, there's calcium deposits in our saliva, and they tend to harden that film. That's what we call tartar or calculus. Plaque is brushed off. It's soft and it's easy to clean. If it's not removed properly, the calcium deposits turn it into what we call tartar or calculus, and that's what causes periodontal disease if it's not removed.
How do you remove it?
We have scalers that we remove. We have a piezo, which is in a Cavitron, which are more ultrasonic, and they tend to remove larger areas of tartar.
If you were to ascertain the experience of a cleaning, right, what percentage would you say should be done with mechanical instrumentation, a piezo or a Cavitron, and then which portion, on average, with a range, with hand instruments?
I'm old
school.
Could
it be 100% one or 100% the other?
I always use hand instruments. That's how I was trained. And I always start with a hand instrument because I can feel if there are deposits under the gum so that I know when I go back with my ultrasonic, I know which areas that I have to go in and clean a little deeper.
Right. So I think the best answer would be, should be a blend.
It's a blend.
It's a blend.
Always. Right.
And some patients, you could probably do a perfect job with no ultrasonic or piezo.
Correct.
You probably couldn't do a perfect job with just piezo
That's
or ultrasonic.
That's my feeling. Correct.
Right? That's our feeling in our practice.
Yes.
So you might want to look out that if you're getting a cleaning and there's no hand instrumentation, either your mouth is spotless, which is not as likely as
yes,
you're
it's
not.
It's unusual.
Right. It's unusual that you would be getting a great cleaning if you just had the mechanical.
Yeah. That's my way of thinking. So I like to use both.
And then I guess the last part of it is you're cleaning the teeth with a pumice or a Profi-Jet. Talk about that for a moment so people understand what we're doing at the end.
So if there's heavy stain, there's something called an air polisher or Profi-Jet. It's like almost like a sandblaster, but it's using a very non-abrasive type of material.
I love that.
Yes. And we can spray it and it just knocks the stain right off. That's on a heavy stain person. Otherwise, we use a pumice. If a patient has a lot of root surface exposure, in other words, there's a lot of recession and the roots are exposed, we tend to use a less coarse pumice so that we don't irritate the tooth structure. And then I have a special pumice for those really heavy stains.
Right, there's a variety of different pumice paste, that fluoride, non-fluoride, desensitizer.
Correct.
Different things in there. Some people don't like mint. And
some people don't want fluoride.
Yeah, so there's a whole different variety.
Yeah.
There's also some things you can do after the cleaning in terms of some therapies that you can administer. Fluoride varnish, sealants. You could do prescription strength fluoride. So we can talk about fluoride for a second since we mentioned it.
So fluoride, I use it a lot. I find that elderly patients tend to have drier mouths. And one of the main reasons is that a lot of medications cause dry mouth. So there are a myriad of medications that do this, and it's really common, and it's a common complaint I get from my elderly patients. So since the saliva is less than it should be, it's not really rinsing out debris from the mouth like it naturally does. And if you're eating sugary foods and it's tends to stick to the tooth structure because the saliva is low, there's more of a chance to get decay. So I tend to use a fluoride varnish on the tooth structures because it helps strengthen that area that's susceptible.
Yeah, literature supports fluoride varnishing as being the best way to prevent tooth decay over prescription strength fluoride toothpaste, actually, right? And so there's some treatments for decay if you're susceptible. There's also some additional things you can do if someone's susceptible for gum disease, periodontal disease.
Well, there's oral probiotics. The brand that we like is Burst. I don't give it to everybody, but I do give it to patients that when I'm scaling and there's a lot of bleeding is something that I advise because it means you're susceptible to inflammation. And this is another tool that can help.
I think it's the only downside of it is time and money. I'm like, that's the kind of thing that I could recommend to everybody. There's one product because there's no downside aside from cost and time, but there's no negative impact at all. from having an oral probiotic. There's also something called Arestin, right? Someone will put, they put this powder in my pocket.
So when I'm talking about the periodontal probing that we do, and I said that we use 5 millimeters of barometer of health, anything over that we tend to consider unhealthy. So if I'm going out around and probing, and then I get into an area that's bleeding, and it's 5 millimeters or deeper, there's a product, it's called Arestin, and it's actually doxycycline, an antibiotic. It's in a powder form. We place it in between the tooth and the gum. It mixes with saliva and actually turns into a gel, and it protects the tooth and sterilizes the area for several days so that the tissue may be able to reattach.
This is another action that probably has no downside.
No downside, no. I find it very effective.
Yeah, we put in pockets with inflammation, pockets that are bleeding, that are deeper, and we can, dare we say, maintain pockets for time without further treatment by doing this, right? The periodontists that we work with throughout this practice that we refer to, they're all pretty aggressive with using Arestin. The downside is cost. It ranges from like 90 to 100 and something dollars per site typically.
But if we can prevent having to do any kind of periodontal surgery, we start with this.
Yeah. The other thing that's done sometimes, and we're not doing in our practice so much though, is this laser therapy at the time of the hygiene appointment that can kind of heat the pocket to kill any bacteria to help the tissue to reattach and to deal with inflammation. So a hygiene appointment can be a lot more than just a cleaning.
Absolutely.
Right. The last thing that we like to do is, and you do this on so many patients, I walk in and you'll be in the middle of showing them how to do something.
Well, first of all, you can't just say to a patient, do you floss? They say yes, and you say, okay, see you later. It's not something innate. You're not born with the ability to floss your teeth. You must be taught. And I do say to patients, I'm going to show you. I know this sounds silly, but I want to show you the proper way to do it. And 9 times out of 10, patients like, I didn't know I should floss that way and get under the gums. And it makes such a difference to do it correctly. And it's easy once you do it. I always say it takes 21 days to establish a habit. So if you can do this for that long, and I have many patients that come back and say, that was such great advice, because now if I stop, I am aware that my teeth don't feel so clean.
So with floss, and we'll get to that a little further in the next session, but I think it's a really important thing to try to master. So work with your dental hygienist with what you should use, how you should use it.
People feel awkward about it at first, like a little embarrassed that they don't know how to do it, but we work together. I have them do it for me. And again, I said, it's pretty simple and it's very, very effective.
I'd like to encourage patients to realize we're working for them at that moment. There's no point in lying. I feel like some people feel like they're being judged.
Well, that's the one thing I say to my patients. I'm not here to judge you. I'm here to help you.
I'm surprised at how often I'm hearing that, which means that they're thinking that even when we don't hear it, right? Even when we don't hear it, they're thinking that. And so frame the relationship properly. We're working for you. Your healthcare providers work for you when you're with them. You know, you dictate the conversation. You control the conversation. You control the path of the treatment. You're in charge there. And so utilize this person to their full value. Leverage that relationship to get the most value out of it. The last thing before we jump into the out-of-office strategies is something that Mark and I, who own and run our practice here and manage the office and deal with patients and figure out who they see and what. This drives us a little crazy in a sense. It's the perception of the quality of a cleaning by how they receive it. So what I mean by this, we'll have 5 patients see the same hygienist. 3 love that person. 1 says they were too aggressive. The other says they weren't aggressive enough. So I would love you to try to talk about what the experience of a cleaning is like and how to ascertain the quality of a cleaning as the person receiving the cleaning.
Well, contrary to popular belief, we don't want to hurt you. That's not a joy I get out of cleaning patients' teeth. So I try to make it as comfortable as possible. I often use topical anesthetic. It's something that's just a liquid that I wipe on the gums, and it numbs the tissue, and it really, really helps. And the other thing I find very important is I give patients control. I always say, if anything is bothering you, raise your left hand. That's a signal. first of all, it's a signal to me. I say left hand because I'm working with my right hand and I don't want them to poke themselves.
I say right hand because I'm on
the left. Yes, that's right, right. So I say left hand, and it does two things. It lets me know if I'm actually bothering them in any way. And psychologically, it gives them a sense of control that, phew, I don't have to worry. Is she going to hurt me? What's going to happen?
If you're doing everything at home properly and you're at the right interval, your cleanings should not be associated with a lot of blood and a lot of pain, right? There might be one-offs, like we have patients that fell off from their cleaning. Life happened. They had a work thing, a family thing, a travel thing. Something happened. They fell off. They were sick. And there's a lot of inflammation in their mouth. But for most of our patients, you shouldn't be bleeding at every cleaning and when you floss every time, like we talked about. The way you experience a cleaning, you should probably assess it over the length of time, not individually. What I mean is, like, if you see a hygienist once and you think the cleaning was too rough or not rough enough, it's probably worth asking them some questions about why was it the way you received it and how you thought it should be. And then working with that person over time to understanding what you need to get to keep your teeth in your mouth as long as you need them to, and to try to understand it more. And again, that make it a team approach. You're working together and understand what it is that you're receiving it. And it's funny because we're using loops and lights and magnification, and we're looking at every single patient every single time. And it's like, we know that there's no calculus left that we can see or feel, right? And so whether you're perceiving it, I don't think that's an accurate assessment of the quality of the cleaning.
Correct.
All right, I guess with that, we can turn to after you leave the office, you're on your own, guys. And most of you keeping your teeth in your mouth throughout your life comes into your responsibility. And so we want to give you the tools while we're with you, and we'll make sure we keep you in line to where you need to be. But let's talk a little bit about home care, which is part of the conversation, which is not 100% of how you keep your teeth, but a large percentage, probably more than 50%. And so what are some of the things you think about are the most important things if you were to teach someone, teaching your grandson how to take care of his teeth from scratch? Where do you start?
I am very basic about my approach. My feeling is the least amount of implements the patient needs that are the most effective. In other words, I'm not going to inundate somebody with, you know, five different things that they have to do to their teeth every night, because that's unrealistic. Some people will do it, but it's unrealistic. So I try to limit the amount of devices I have them use. And if it's somebody that can floss, brushing with an electric toothbrush for 2 minutes in the morning and 2 minutes the evening effectively, and flossing their teeth once a day effectively, and cleaning their tongue. You can use a tongue scraper. You can use a soft bristle toothbrush underwater. You don't need toothpaste. What you're doing in essence is keeping the bacteria off your teeth. There's really not more that has to be done. I know that there are rinses and oil pullings and other things that you can do, but my feeling is clean is clean. So if you've cleaned effectively, there's no need for any additional devices.
When should somebody brush their teeth in the morning? When they wake up or after they eat breakfast?
Well, if they eat breakfast, you want to wait a little while to brush because the foods cause acids. And so if you're brushing your teeth right after you eat, you're already spreading the acids, right?
And your teeth are softer,
Yeah, or you do it first thing in the morning before you eat.
Right, so the best thing to do would be to wake up and brush your teeth and then go about your day. The technique of brushing, I think, is really important, right? The technique of flossing is really important. It's worth us putting a few links in the show notes, and it's worth you looking on YouTube if you're interested how to properly floss, how to properly brush. You could really find out how to do it properly. We find a lot of patients brush too hard, too quickly, not doing it effectively. They're scratching their gums and their teeth. They're not cleaning the surfaces.
Like, everybody wants to get out of the bathroom and get their teeth clean, but using an electric toothbrush, you have to be very patient. It's a different mechanism than a regular toothbrush. A regular toothbrush scrubs. That's how you clean the plaque off your teeth. An electric toothbrush works by vibration. It's ultrasonic. So you have to get in your head that you're not scrubbing. You're placing the bristles between the tooth and the gum, and you're holding it for a few seconds and slowly moving it from tooth to tooth. And it's the vibrations that's cleaning, not the scrubbing method. It takes a while to learn to be patient with that, but it's worth it. And they're on 2 minute timer, so you really try to use it for the full 2 minutes.
Yeah, try to use it. Two minutes.
2 minutes.
2 minutes.
I know. 2 minutes. Think about it.
Would you recommend somebody floss or brush first?
I get that question asked a lot. Personally, I don't care. As long as you're flossing and brushing, that's fine. But if they push me, I would say it's probably more effective to floss first because you're bringing the plaque out from between your teeth and then you brush it off. But honestly, as long as you're doing both.
Yeah, and if you floss prior to brushing, you're allowing any medicinal molecules or elements in the toothpaste to get between your teeth. If you're flossing after you brush, then the fluoride or hydroxyapatite, whatever you're using, is not going to penetrate between your teeth, which is where most dental disease is occurring, between your teeth. So how do you feel about manual toothbrushes versus electric?
I am full-on electric toothbrush.
I think our entire practice, we have almost 17 practitioners that are part of our practice, from the doctor to the hygienist, and every single one of us uses an electric toothbrush, and every single one of us thinks that's the way to go.
So I've been doing this for, as you can see, many, many, many years. And I think that was the major difference in terms of Hocare, was the invention of an electric toothbrush, no question.
Yeah, so we like Sonicare and Oral-B are the products that we like. We like them because they've been around and tested for decades, right? That's not to say that there won't be a better one coming out at some point, but right now, at the time of recording this, there's not. There's some brushes that were in the market, became really popular about 5 years ago. These little brushes that look like a manual brush, but have a little battery and they vibrate slightly. It's not the same animal, right? You need something that's really mechanically, like you said, vibrating or rotating, oscillating to clean significantly better than a regular brush.
And that's not a battery. I've had patients say, yeah, I use the electric brush. It has a battery. That's not the same.
If you're changing the battery yourself, it's not the same brush, like the spin brushes and things.
And if you're using an electric brush, it's very important to change the brush about every 3 months. It's not because it's not clean, but the bristles tend to get softer over time.
Softer, they scratch, and then they don't effectively clean and they scratch your gum tissue, right? Okay, so toothpaste, right? We mentioned that there is whitening toothpaste, which in general we recommend to stay away from for the most part. Fine, you want to use it once or twice a week, fine. You want to use it on Friday night before you go to dinner, fine. But we don't believe in something as being part of your routine at home because of the reasons you mentioned, right? Scratching tooth surface, abrading your tooth surface, and also your gum recession. So sensitive toothpastes versus fluoride toothpaste versus non-fluoride toothpastes. What are your thoughts around all this?
Well, I like fluoride. I believe in it, and particularly as we get older, and as I said, if you get recessions, your gums recede, the root structures are exposed. They're very susceptible to decay. So to me, fluoride is important. There are people that absolutely refuse to use fluoride, and there are other toothpastes that contain something, nanohydroxyapatite, which is also pretty effective. And it is an alternative, but I tend to think the fluoride toothpaste, as far as I know, in terms of studies and data, work.
And if you're worried about fluoride, just rinse well afterwards, right? The number one toothpaste in terms of literature is a calcium phosphate fluoride toothpaste known as MI1. It's hard to get because the company doesn't distribute to stores. You have to get through your dentist. That probably performs the best of any toothpaste. And then you have fluoride toothpaste and nanohydroxyapatite toothpaste that perform somewhat equally. There are limited studies on nanohydroxyapatite. There's not a lot of studies. The ones that are there show promising results, but we need more time to really ascertain the long-term health benefits of that. So I just would caution people. I use nanohydroxyapatite toothpaste at home with my kids, and I alternate. I bounce around. Plus, we're always getting samples, so I'm always trying something.
Exactly. The other thing about toothpaste is you do not need a lot of toothpaste on the toothbrush, just a pea-sized amount.
There's some studies about erosion on teeth, and they find that the causative factor is the toothpaste more than the brush. So the more toothpaste you add, the more abrasive particles you're adding to your mouth and the more abrasive what the act that you're doing is. So let's compare what you said previously. There's three main ways that people can clean between their teeth, right? There are things that we call interdental cleaners that are these little picks and such, right? They're like moderately hard, somewhat soft, rubbery, or bristles that someone would poke in between every tooth and clean, versus floss. And with floss, we have a couple different types. We have thin kind of tape flosses. We have thick ones that are made of like little woven ropes. There's the POH that you love that has these like strands of it. So there's different thickness flosses with also different materials. And then there are water picks. So how would you advise someone if they said, well, Amy, what's the minimum that I need? And if I wanted to be professional about it, what would I do?
Again, as you know, I'm a firm believer in flossing. Now, not everybody can floss. There are people that have dexterity problems and they can't use the floss. They can't manipulate it correctly. So then I would go to the water flosser. And that's something that does get in between the teeth. It is better than nothing, much better than nothing. Again, I'd prefer the floss, but if it is impossible to floss for various reasons, then the water pick is a good second choice.
And what about interdental cleaners? Things that are soft picks or different things?
I love soft picks. They're rubber. So the old interdental cleaners were bristles. And I found over watching, you know, a period of time that they would actually irritate the gums. Soft picks come in two sizes. There's the regular size. There's a wider space where people have large spaces in between their teeth. And they're not abrasive. It just kind of pushes out debris. And I think they're really effective.
So it probably means if you wanted to do the best job possible, you would have a multiple approach here. You might use multiple things.
You might, yep.
Right, you might, for a wider space, you might use the water pick or the soft picks, the interdental cleaners. You might floss your whole mouth and then use a combination of situational, or we have patients that will floss their entire mouth, water pick their entire mouth, brush their teeth.
They'll do everything out there.
And these are people who probably have the highest level of oral health in our practice. So you do get repaid for the effort and energy you put in if you're doing it by the right technique and using the right products. On right products, how do you feel about mouth rinse?
Very good question. My opinion is that, first of all, sometimes mouth rinses are used in lieu of proper cleaning with floss, the interdental picks. Everyone's trying to figure out a quick way around cleaning their teeth. I look at the bottles of mouth rinse and they're blue or green. What is in them? We don't know. It's not natural. I prefer natural products that I know what you're using. So to rinse your mouth with a chemically filled minty rinse, look at, if you want to use it after you've done everything else and you know your mouth is clean, we tend to associate mint with clean. That's marketing. So you swish with mouthwash, it feels clean, you have good breath, and 10 minutes later, it's gone and your bacteria is still there if you haven't cleaned your teeth. So if you want your mouth to be as fresh as possible, you brush, you floss, you scrape your tongue or brush your tongue, and then bacteria is off. There's no need for anything else.
Yeah, we agree here that mouth rinses are the most overutilized product in dental hygiene.
Because they're quick. It's
they're quick, fix. They're easy, they make you feel good.
Yeah.
They sound good.
Tastes good, I'm going out.
Sounds good, like, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it sounds good. Just rinse out. It probably is doing a detriment to your oral microbiome also. A lot of the traditional mouth rinses, and we were talking about this a few weeks ago, Listerine and other products like that will decimate your microbiome, allowing for opportunistic bacteria to overcome the spaces. So you might actually be doing something detrimental to your health. If you love rinsing with something, I would stress that afterwards to use an oral probiotic, because your microbiome is very important in maintaining your health.
You need a neutral microbiome in your mouth. There's good bacteria and bad bacteria, and you don't want to offset one.
And on the same thing, bacteria, you mentioned tongue scraping, which is a very simple, quick thing to do. You could also put a video on how to do that. You want to do it in one direction. There's brushes, there's metal ones. Dr. Tongues is great, and you could see how to use that. That's probably an important part of your overall health.
If you look at your tongue and it looks bumpy, those are called papilla, and bacteria gets caught in the papilla. So if you want your breath to be really fresh, that is one thing that you can do. It's super effective.
And then, you know, you and I were talking about oil pulling. If a patient came to you and they asked you, you know, my spouse is oil pulling and they advise that I do it, what do you think about this?
Okay. I've been reading a lot about oil pulling because I know it's on TikTok, which I don't really follow, but I hear from my kids, oh, we're going to oil pull. That's a great thing to do. Coconut oil for 20 minutes. And I'm thinking, if you're going to use oil pulling for 20 minutes, if you just brushed and flossed and used tongue scraper, there's no need for anything else. It doesn't, I found no data to prove that it's effective. It can dry your mouth and it can also irritate your stomach. So I'm not a fan.
I'd rather do squats for 20 minutes
I
than
would
oil
too.
Pull, right? Right, pick up some weights. Do a plank for 20 minutes
exactly.
Instead of oil pulling.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, we debate on this, Amy and I, and if it's something you want to do, I think it's fine, but you have to realize that we don't think there's a huge therapeutical benefit in oil pulling.
If you want to add it to your routine and spend an extra 20 minutes pulling oil through your teeth, that's fine with me. but do all the other things that are more effective.
Right. So work with your hygienist and really think about how you're targeting the things in your mouth and your susceptibility and how you're cleaning the products that you use, the products that you buy, and how you use them. And you can work with your hygienist and your dentist to figure out which those are. You could try some different things. During the day, we like to recommend xylitol products and mints, right? Those are something that can be very effective in helping to target the bacteria that cause cavities. If you're susceptible to gum disease, we do have some patients that might floss after lunch, right, at work or in the morning and at night. And that seems to be very effective.
Also with patients with dry mouth, which is very common, there are over-the-counter mouthwashes that contain xylitol, and it's a safe thing to use.
What are some of the most common mistakes you see with your patients that people are, I didn't realize that would be a problem?
Not cleaning in between their teeth is number one. That's a problem. And not doing things correctly.
Using the wrong technique. They might have the right floss for them, but they're not flossing properly. As for diet, some people think they're eating healthy or not, and we find there's a lot of things that might be causing negative impact. What are some of the things that...
The most common to me, I've followed my patients long enough to know their history. And if I see a patient come in, particularly an older patient, and all of a sudden they have rampant decay, the first question I ask is, are you eating dried fruits? So first of all, their mouths are dry typically from medication. So there's no saliva to rinse the food debris off their teeth. Dried fruits are sugar. They contain all sugar and they're sticky. So anything that's sugary and sticky will stick to the tooth surface. And that's something that's an issue.
Right. The thing that when we were prepping our notes, you wrote, there's no such thing as healthy sugar for your mouth, right? So especially sticky things are the worst. Things like chocolate aren't as bad as an apricot or prune or something that's dry.
And we always say, if you're going to have sugar, which we all want sugar once in a while, don't spread it out during the day, because each time you introduce sugar to the tooth structure, you're making it more susceptible to decay. So if you want to like binge on your chocolate, after dinner, make sure you rinse with water afterwards.
And the other thing that we see is that people unknowingly drink acidic beverages, right? We have so many patients who come in with a bottle of sparkling water or like a different type of energy drink or something.
There's so many over the counter. I can't keep track of all of them.
And they're always changing. Yeah, there's so many right now. So acidic beverages, sticky carbohydrates are the things you want to be really mindful of. You're feeding the negative bacteria in your mouth. What about habits? Are there anything that you see that patients do that they should avoid? How would you advise people to use their teeth?
Don't use them to open packages. People that bite their nails, their teeth can chip from that. So that's something that they wouldn't even realize.
We try to tell patients to not use your front teeth as tools, to be careful what you bite into.
And people who have had restorations on their front teeth, they really should avoid biting into a crusty bread or an apple. They want to be careful about chewing in or biting into things.
So I think one thing we could talk about also is, what should people expect as they age? Even if they're doing everything right, what will change in your mouth as we go along this journey?
As we age, sometimes the bacterial content can change and make you more susceptible to periodontal disease. So I may see patients, for many, many years and they're fine. And then they start coming in with bleeding and gum recession. So we have to be mindful to treat them differently. Well, I have a lot of patients coming in that used to come in every 6 months, and I switch them to every 3 months just to catch and clean the bacteria before it becomes a problem, before it becomes periodontal disease. And a lot of them have gum recession, which leaves large spaces. That's another complaint I often hear. I eat a meal and everything's stuck. So we may change what we're using in terms of home care, wider spaces, soft picks to get the food out. I may have patients use those more frequently instead of once a day. Maybe after meals, carry them in your purse and make sure you get the food out from in between your teeth. So there can be changes.
A normal amount of recession happens to every patient, naturally, to every patient. And so adjusting how you clean your teeth is really important as you age. And as these spaces open up, like you said, the soft picks and water pick start becoming really useful tools.
Especially if their dexterity changes over time too.
If we look at the whole conversation, kind of to wrap up everything, I guess, your approach would be what?
My approach would be treat every patient as an individual. Again, not one size fits all, and custom tailor their home care routine according to what their needs are, not just what we think, you know, everybody else should be doing.
Right. So when you read the article in Times, or you're talking at a party and you're wondering, how often should I do X? You should ask yourself the question, what am I doing this for? And what am I susceptible to at this point in time to prevent the things that are preventable? All right.
Yeah.
Well, Aim, thanks for everything. Please let us know what questions you have, follow-up information anyone needs. Email us, make a comment on YouTube, on wherever you're encountering us, and we'll get back to you. Amy, thank you for sitting down with us and taking care of our patients.
It was fun. Okay. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you.
Great.
Thank you for joining us this week. I hope you found it helpful and enjoyable. Please head to our website for our show notes and more information around the topics we discussed today. Please check us out on our YouTube, Instagram, and TikTok pages for weekly updates and other interesting topics we discuss more frequently. The information provided in this podcast is for general information and educational purposes only and is not a substitute for professional advice. Accordingly, before taking any actions based on such information, we encourage you to consult with the appropriate professionals. We do not provide any medical nor health advice. You should seek the full diagnosis and treatment from your healthcare providers for any issues or conditions you may have. No doctor and patient relationship is formed. The use or reliance of any information used from this podcast is solely at your own risk. This podcast is purely for educational and informative purposes only.